Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together, we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your homeschool companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. You know, in 1979, when I began my first teaching assignment as a fifth grade teacher, parents would ask for advice and I would freely give it. This advice was based on what I'd seen my parents or other parents do, and it seemed like a perfect thing to give. Then 2 years later, I had my first child. This event changed my whole paradigm. And for a while, I declined to give any advice. You see, my son was wired for action. If it could be broke, he broke it. If it could be thrown, he threw it. If it could be put into his mouth, he ate it. If it could be opened, he opened it, and so on and so forth. From the moment he woke up until he went to sleep, I was always on the move, and I had to be on high alert. I diagnosed him as ADHD, and I read everything I could on the subject. We modified our diet. We made sure that he watched very little or no TV. He was not allowed to do any video gaming, and I don't think he's forgiven me for that to this day. Now, my second child, a little girl, was born just a little over a year later, and she was pretty much left to herself as I ran from one emergency to the next with my son. Now, my son is grown, and he's the principal of an elementary school. I get great satisfaction in thinking that he's getting paid back for his raising. He has since diagnosed himself to have a high-functioning Asperger syndrome. My daughter, on the other hand, was a friend's friend. Growing up, she organized the social events of all the neighborhood kids. But when she went to school, she couldn't learn to read. I think it was probably in the beginning of the second grade she suffered some physical abuse from one teacher who became so frustrated over her inability to read that she actually put her hands in her mouth and forced her mouth open. And so at that point, I took her to Helen Erlen, and she was diagnosed with ectopic sensitivity syndrome, which is kind of a fancy word for dyslexia. From those first years when I didn't know better and I freely gave advice until now, most everything has touched me through my family in some way, such as obesity, alcoholism, high-risk behaviors, divorce, death, unemployment, epilepsy, stroke, cancer, aging, infertility, sibling rivalry. You know, it's through this crucible, this bridge of human experience, that we bring to you today's show, What Parents Ask. And here to moderate is my husband, my best friend, and show producer, Michael Gamblin. So let's start.
Hello there.
Questions that parents have sent us.
Yes, we have some questions here. The first one is, my child is 2 months old, and she was waking up at night crying. I want to go to her, but my husband said, you need to let her cry and herself back to sleep. Help!
I can so relate to that new mother with a child that wakes up sometimes screaming in the middle of the night. I mean, you can just tell by their cry that they're petrified, and that's the only way they can communicate. They've either had a bad dream, their tummy's hurting them, they need a drink, they need some milk, and they're so vulnerable. And not to discount the husband's attitude, he needs his sleep too. I mean, both the mother and the father need their sleep, and they're so sleep deprived during those first few years. But I would suggest that you set a timer. It could just be a little 3-minute sand timer, so it doesn't even need to make any noise, but it really helps that new mother wake up that child screaming and to turn that timer over, and for 3 minutes, anybody can take 3 minutes. And if the child's still crying after 3 minutes, then go to them. A lot of the time, that child will go back to sleep, and the mother will too.
But how do you rule out if there is a physical thing going on? Should you go at least peek in and don't let them see you? Or just let them cry for the 3 minutes, even if they've got their hand caught in something? How do you determine with that?
Well, you first of all know that when you've put them to bed, hopefully you've put them in a very safe environment so you can rule out that they've, you know, wedged their foot in the crib, or they've gotten tangled up in a Playmobil, or their bottles opened up and spilled all over them. If you can rule those out and feel pretty confident, 3 minutes, you can take 3 minutes. Nowadays, you know, with all of the hype in the news media of, you know, child abduction and things like that, well, you'd want to make sure that the windows were securely locked, that you had a good alarm system in your home. But 3 minutes, 3 minutes is a pretty good time. If the child is just disturbed in their sleep, they'll go back in 3 minutes. They'll go back to sleep in 3 minutes.
And it probably will seem like a long
time.
Yes,
yes.
Next question. I have a 3-year-old boy who isn't talking, and I'm afraid he is autistic. Should I be worried?
Now, there needs to be a little more background to this. I'm not sure of the background, but I can tell you that if he has older siblings, he will most likely be delayed in talking, but that doesn't mean he's delayed in communicating. So if your child is still communicating, maybe his older siblings verbalize everything for him. They already know when he wants this or he wants that, and it's handed to him before he is forced to actually articulate what he needs. So I wouldn't be worried about it if he wasn't talking. Boys tend to be later in their language development than girls. I would be worried if he wasn't connecting. Connecting is a bigger indicator of the chance of an autistic situation than the communicating. And the connecting just means, does he look at you? Does he get that little mischievous grin in his face when he's about to do something you've already told him not to do? A three-year-old knows. They already are picking up on the nuances of humor and teasing, and so they know. Is he connecting with you? If he's connecting with you and not verbalizing, I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay, next question. I'm a 40-year-old, and I just got pregnant for the first time. My doctor is suggesting that I have the embryo genetically tested for defects. I'm worried sick.
You know, I have to give a little bit of background into this question, because it was a situation where the husband had been on pretty strong chemotherapy regime and was supposedly sterile. So this couple never expected that she would ever be pregnant. So just the fact that she was pregnant was such a miracle. And when this question came to me pretty late at night from a sobbing friend over the phone, you know, I just had to say, you have been so grateful to God for the pregnancy. That if there was something genetically wrong with this child, would it change what you plan to do? Would you abort the child if there was something genetically wrong? And she goes, no, I would not abort the child even if there was something genetically wrong. I wouldn't abort the child. And I said, well, you can go ahead and get it tested, but if it's not going to change how you're going to react, then, you know, take that into consideration, because with genetic testing, there is some risk. They're actually putting a needle into that embryo. It has been known to cause the baby to spontaneously abort. So, you know, pray about this, and pray more that God will take your worry away, because the worry in itself is not a good thing for that very special pregnancy. So I think that to others, you know, to applying what I learned through that experience to other mothers who might have a similar question. God says in His Word that He thought about us before He put us together in our mother's womb. He thought about us. He knew what our environment, what impact our environment would have on us. He knew what genetics we would have inherited, but He still thought about us. And it was only by God's miraculous gift of life that we came into being. And with that being said, we have to take our worry and hand it over to Jesus Christ and put it at the foot of the cross, because we know joy is a powerful, powerful tool. Joy is what God created us for. Well, I guess we have to take a break. We've gotten through how many questions?
Three of them.
Gotten through three questions. We have a lot of questions here, and we'll try to get through a few more of the second half. So right now we'll take a break and we'll be right back.
Over 1.5 million Americans are diagnosed with cancer every year. What these people need most is hope for their journey. The body of Christ can provide real hope.
Our Journey of Hope is an amazing opportunity for believers to stand in the gap of one of the greatest needs in our nation. There are open doors for the goodness, the grace, and the gospel of Jesus Christ to work in the lives of millions of Americans.
Sybil was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Despite great challenges, she and her husband placed their hope in God.
Cancer patients have to work against unbelievable odds for the possibility of survival. And at the end of that is predicated upon the ability to be hopeful, faith and the hope in the Lord Jesus Christ.
Sybil and her husband are not alone on their journey. Their church family has come alongside to support them every step of the way.
It's part of being part of the body of Christ, where when one part suffers, we all suffer. And I want to tell you, we've learned to love more and care more because of the difficulty you guys have had. And since seeing you guys, I have a whole new outlook, and I have a whole lot of new advice for anyone with cancer in our church.
They need someone to stand with them and to hold their hand, to wipe the sweat from their forehead, to dry the tears from their eyes, and say that tomorrow potentially can be a better day.
Our Journey of Hope is the ministry of love, hope, and encouragement. We provide pastors and ministry leaders with the tools, training, and support to create effective cancer care ministries in their churches and communities.
You have an opportunity to minister to the world in a way that maybe you've never done so, that will allow your ministry to expand its reach and its growth in your local communities.
The first step in launching a cancer care ministry is to attend a cancer care leadership training held throughout the year. During this two-day workshop, you will receive the training and the resources needed to start a cancer care ministry in your church. Using our biblically based cancer care ministry curriculum, you will be able to equip and empower members of your congregation to meet the spiritual and practical needs of those dealing with cancer. Once training is complete, your team of cancer care ministers will bring hope to those who are hurting. Visit ourjourneyofhope.com to learn more about starting a cancer care ministry in your church.
Welcome back. The title of our show today is The Questions Parents Ask. And, you know, now at my sage old age, I feel like, yes, I can humbly say some words of advice that may give comfort to some of our listeners. And here to help moderate this is Michael Gamblin. So what do we have next?
Our next question comes, I have two adopted daughters. They are both from the same mother, so they have that connection. Yet they fight like they hate each other. You wouldn't believe the difficult it is at the home. All the constant bickering and fighting. Any suggestions?
Well, first of all, I think that every parent who adopts needs to fully understand that they are adopting a child that has a primal wound. And a primal wound is simply described as that child was taken away from their mother. at a very young age. They have no coping skills at that age to articulate how it feels. But it's a primal wound. That's probably the best way to describe it. So it's a great ministry. You've adopted a child. This child needs so much more affirmation than your own birth child. Some of you have done both. You've adopted and you've also had birth children. And I think that with it, there needs to be gained this understanding that this child needs more affirmation. They need more borders. The borders need to be well-defined, and they need to feel very safe, because at some point in their life, they felt very unsafe. And a little bit of the background of these two daughters, they were initially put into foster care as infants. And then the parents regained custody, so they were taken out of foster care and given back to their parents. And they were in the most horrific, abusive situation for 5 years, and then they were again taken out of their biological parents' environment, and their original foster parents were allowed to adopt them. But now they had a lot of damage now. So the fighting, it's really a cry for help, because they're still not quite sure of their position in the universe. They aren't quite sure of their position in the family. There's abandonment issues, and I know that the constant fighting and bickering can be dealt with, you know, in a cause and effect way. You know, if you do this, you're going to get a spanking. If you do this, you'll get this reward. But the underlying things need to be dealt with probably on a professional basis.
Is counseling something you suggest there? Or with the constant support and love from the parents, they will outgrow this too. Which way would you think they should go that way?
The professional help, they definitely need professional help, and I know the family does have both girls in counseling. And I sometimes think that parents relax, or they are so sympathetic to what the children have suffered that they don't provide the firm boundaries. Because in working with the girls at school, they totally changed. They went from that fighting and hating each other. Just in a few weeks, they went to taking care of each mm-hmm. other. If one got in trouble and got a penalty of having some classroom money taken away,
the first one to defend her was the sister.
Yeah, they would bring the money and pay the fine for them. And so you saw that natural nurturing taking place. And the thing that we had done differently was there were very strict rules, very closely followed at school. They had to respect each other.
You have a very unique saying that you live by at school. Could you tell our parents that you live by?
Well, we respect God, we respect others, and we respect ourselves. And the respect ourselves at first glance doesn't seem very important, but you will be surprised at how many messages we tell ourselves. I can't do that. I'm dumb. I'm ugly.
Oh, yes.
And when you're working with the age group that I do, which is middle school and high school, that's pretty prevalent. The put downs, you know, is just part of the culture, and we totally kibosh it.
Yeah, you can't talk bad about yourself either, or somebody else, because you're not respecting
right.
yourself.
Right.
And when you don't talk bad about yourself, then those positive messages will start being reinforced in your own mind, that mm-hmm. maybe I am worth something. Maybe I am good enough to do this.
Yes. We've seen many miracles where students, as they become immersed in that culture, and parents will say, oh, my child seems to become a different person when they walk through these doors. And they do become a different person.
They do. I've seen it myself.
They do. Any other questions?
I have to go back to work I hate leaving my child with somebody else, but we have to pay the bills. What would be the best situation for my child and yet give me some peace of mind?
Well, there's an old saying that says, when mama's happy, everybody's happy.
Oh, yes.
And if mama isn't happy leaving the child, it won't matter if the bills get paid or not. That's a very stressful situation. And I know so many mothers who struggle with that. I know as a young mother, I struggled with it. I opted to stay at home until my children reached school age. I got over 7 eviction notices. I faced homelessness. And I really wondered where God was, because I was doing what I thought he wanted me to do, and that was to stay home with my children. And this, of course, was after I had already started my career as a teacher, so I had been a teacher for a couple of years. So to choose to stay home with my children and then face this poverty was very difficult. Now looking back at it, I'm glad I made that investment, but I also wouldn't advise everybody to do it, because it was stressful, and it would have been terrible if I had ended up sleeping in the car with my 2 kids. I look at it this way. There are so many loving child care providers. Many states also have vouchers that you can use for child care. And you just have to go visit the child care center. If they have the option where you can leave the child for a day for free, like to see if it really is a fit, do something like that. Look to see if they, if they do have this thing of respect and love for that child, if they believe your child is of immeasurable value, what is their mission statement? Do they espouse to the same values that you have? These are such important things. You know, time is running short, and I believe this generation that is in preschool now, I look at the talent in it, and you know that I'm, as a principal of a school, I'm also the overall director of a child development center that has 2, 3, and 4-year-olds. And the children that come in have so many talents, and I see them praying, I see them nurturing each other at this very tiny age, and I'm going, God has imbued them with these special gifts. They will live to see Jesus come. We are in the last generation. I have so much more to say, but I know we're coming to the end of our show. And I just thank my listeners for being there with us year after year. We are now starting our 8th year.
This is the beginning of our
8th year. And through that year, I mean, through the years, I have seen how the earth is coming down to the final close, to the final conclusion. And the young people, we are preparing for that final demarcation line between what is good and what is right. And we want to do the very best by our children. Well, we have just one last thing to say, and that is,
God bless. You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.